And I think that those east end lights, muggy nights, the curtains drawn in the little room downstairs.
Matt Bubala with you here, 720 WGN, 1036 p.m. in Chicago, the same time it is in Austin, Texas. I got to travel all the way down to Austin because I got to hand out a victory lap to a young lady named Sonia Van Meter. She is known as Bourbon Face on Twitter, and she is a Democratic opposition researcher. And she told me right before the election, or I think we were tweeting on the day of, she said Georgia. And later in the night, I said, Georgia's not looking so good. And then the next day, Georgia looked really good. And here it is, two senators from Georgia, both Democrats, the first black senator ever from the South, a Jewish senator from Georgia. And now it's 50-50 in the Senate, and Vice President Kamala Harris will be the tie-breaking vote. Hello, Sonia Van Meter.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Quite a week we've had, hasn't it been?
Well, you know, it's funny because I'm thinking, oh, I'll talk to Sonia about Georgia and the election, and then the rest of the world burns down, and then I think, well, I guess we could talk about other things too, but, you know, I did want to start here because I was giving you some heat, like, oh, come on, it's not going to happen. This is, you're just full of pipe dreams like you were in 2016, but all of your dreams suddenly seem to kind of come true this year.
Well, I don't know that all of them came true, but a good number of them did. And Georgia was definitely top of the list. I was very, very pleased. A tiny bit surprised, you know, as you were observed in 2016. Boy, did I swing and miss. But I think Georgia was always on the cusp. And I, you know, as a Democratic operative, I'm glad to see that it went the way that it did.
Sonia, you're a Democratic opposition researcher, so give us 2 minutes of what does that mean? What do you do? When you get hired by a client, what are you trying to figure out and find out?
Ah, right. Okay, so opposition research, in the real world, it's basically we look through publicly available records to help put together a narrative about a candidate. And if you've ever watched shows like The West Wing or Scandal or House of Cards, opposition research looks so much cooler on TV. But the truth of the matter is, proper opposition researchers stick to only what is available in the public record. And that means records that anyone can get. I don't have to have a special license or a special permit. I don't have to have a badge. I don't have to be law enforcement. These are records that are publicly available to anyone. And that includes stuff like Secretary of State filings. It includes criminal histories, of course. It includes voting records, things of that nature. Things that it doesn't include, anything pertaining to your Social Security number, anything pertaining to medical records, anything pertaining to children under the age of 18. You know, there are certain things that we as a community have decided are a matter of public record, and there's a reason they're a matter of public record. And then there are things that shouldn't be, and so we stay very, very far away from those things, and for a lot of reasons. But the biggest one is that if you start digging around in people's private business, it's a bad look for you. It just muddies the water. It confuses everything. And suddenly you look like the bad guy, no matter how juicy the dirt you found on your opponent was. So that's what we do. We poke around and take a look at public records and see what kind of story I can tell about my clients and about my opponent based on what's out there. And then we try to build the campaign around the best, you know, narrative that we can possibly build.
Sonia, I want to ask, because you mentioned like shows like The West Wing or movies, stuff like that. So then I'd have to ask you, because always in those shows and movies in general, maybe not The West Wing, there's always where they find out something. And then the good candidate says, I'm not using that. We're not using that against him. We're not going to do that. And then somebody underhanded says, you're right, sir. And then they secretly get it out. Or, you know, this package showed up in the mail and we found out, you know, he murdered 12 people back in the 60s and nobody knows. Or he's got another family living in California, or whatever it is, you don't go after that stuff. I imagine, like in any profession, there are some people who play dirty and do go after that stuff. And maybe you'd say, well, those aren't opposition researchers. Those are just scummy people who do that type of thing. Is that what you would say?
You know, it's a bit of a gray area. You know, the line that you want to stay on the right side of is you know, certainly, you know, where the law is very clear. You know, so for example, medical records, I cannot pursue those. However, if somehow some medical record somewhere that says, you know, such and such actually has stage 4, you know, cancer and probably has only a 5% chance of surviving past the election date, if that somehow gets into the bloodstream, if that lands on the internet, if a reporter writes about that, then it's in the public record. And, you know, me simply conveying that information or helping a mail vendor or a commercial, you know, an ad maker convey that message, you know, that's not breaking any rules. It was already out there.
Let me ask you, Sonia.
There's a little bit of wiggle room.
So if somehow that information, which you didn't search for, suddenly appears, you would feel like, well, we can't run with that. But you maybe could hand it off to somebody who, and what they do with it is up to them, and then it ends up in the paper, and then it's public record?
very specific about how I answer this question. My firm, and my opposition researchers will never, under any circumstances, pursue records that aren't legally obtainable by all people. If I can't FOIA it or search for it on the internet, or obtain it in another completely 100% legal way, I'm not pursuing it.
You're not pursuing it. I get that, and I'm glad that you don't. Uh-huh. But if somebody else says, hey, I know this guy, and I think he's a bad person, you should know blank, and that gets handed to you, you know, is that dramatic scene in the movie where you all look at each other in the room and say, well,
You know, we can advise our clients do a lot of different things, and I think it probably depends on the circumstances. Of course, you know, it's politics, and the real world is messy, and you know, there are ways of you know, getting information that is already a matter of public record, you know, into a bigger public record, shall we say?
Yeah.
And sometimes those avenues do need to be pursued. Yes.
Is there, let's stay in the movies for a second because it's always fun. When these things happen and something gets found out that you're like, wow. But maybe sometimes you're like, or I'd imagine sometimes it's something that, you know, is going to be published. It's going to be this or that, or you could hand it off, but you're like, that might make us look bad or make him look better in some way that something that bad comes out. I imagine there's some times or a time or two, or maybe you've heard stories of where somebody found out something really nasty, but they're like, it might even look worse that it somehow, if that ever came back, that it was us that put it out, it'd be worse than the fact that it was out there for the opposition candidate. And I wonder also if there have been times in history where one team gets some really juicy stuff and instead of putting it out there, goes to the other person and says, here's what we know. And then sort of negotiate some sort of truce over what the two sides will and will not do to each other during the course of the election run?
All the time. Both of those circumstances happen all the time.
Wow.
The number of times that we have found information on our opponents and been like, yo, this isn't just campaign ending, this is career ending. But we have chosen to not run with it precisely because it was so, it would have made our own candidate look bad if it had been traced back to us. That happens very frequently. And I can think of at least two circumstances where information that we found, we just went straight to the other candidate and said, if you run this campaign, we're gonna let this information out. And they literally withdrew from the race.
Really?
Oh, yeah. That is actually far more common than you might think. There is some information out there. And you kind of hit the nail on the head on that first part. There's a reason, as I said before, there's a reason that certain information is not a matter of public record. For example, you know, at the presidential level, we've seen this before, going after candidates' children. You know, the way that we went after the Bush daughters or Chelsea Clinton. That is, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that's unforgivable. You know, there is no reason to ever drag a candidate's underage child into a race like this.
Did people really?
Did
that happen? Did people go after Chelsea and the Bush twins? I remember reading a lot of, you know, we're not going to do that type of thing, but I don't remember reading stuff, and, you know, outside of goofs on the internet, I don't remember them being attacked. Did campaigns use the daughters against the candidates?
I I seem to remember there have been not necessarily opponents to those particular candidates, but certainly journalists and of the tabloid variety in particular,
sure.
And other candidates looking to attack the credibility of those candidates once they were in office. Yes, and they're meant to be character attacks on the parents, obviously, not on the children per se.
Yeah.
It's meant to be an attack on the adults for not knowing how to raise them or not raising them politely. And we're still seeing it with Sasha and Malia, now with the Obamas, and they're not even in office anymore. It's a common thing, and it makes for, great clickbait, and some juicy headlines that'll, sell a few copies. But at the end of the day, that's one of the reasons that we don't focus on that, is because it doesn't really, we've seen the needle move, and it just doesn't. Like, it doesn't sway voters.
Yeah.
Most of the time voters find that kind of attack really repugnant and morally indefensible. And, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. What matters to them is what the candidate is going to mean for their tax bracket, for their educational opportunities, for their job opportunities, things of that nature. So that's what opposition researchers are supposed to focus on.
Sonia, was one of President Trump's strengths, and I know for you it's particularly hard to say anything like that, but would one of his strengths be that there was like nothing you could truly dig up on him because it just didn't matter? I mean, the things that came out against President Trump during that election, the first election, I can't imagine another candidate who survives and gets elected with things like the Entertainment Tonight or Access Hollywood or whatever it was, the tape, the tax issues. Mm-hmm. I mean, just other quotes, other accusations, assault, all the assault allegations. I mean, all of these things that came out, and he was Teflon. And I wonder if he was just like an Oppo researcher's nightmare, because it's like, unless we find out that I don't know what. I don't know what it could have, something too vile for me to say on the radio, I guess. I don't know what you could have found at that point. You almost have been looking at each other like, I mean, he himself said, listen, I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue. It's not going to matter. And when the candidate says that himself publicly, and it was like, yeah, I guess he's right. Do you just throw your hands up and go, all right, well, I don't know. Maybe people fall asleep and don't vote. That's what we hope for.
I mean, so to answer your question, there was nothing that any opposition researcher could do in the case of Donald Trump. But that's for one very specific reason. The reason is this: the man doesn't have shame. He doesn't have a conscience. Most people, most normal, sane, reasonably well-adjusted people, when they get caught in the act of doing something that is wrong or shameful, they have the good sense to be embarrassed by it. And Donald is immune to that. I mean, he lacks the conscience of any kind. So it didn't matter that he was, violating all kinds of norms and in some cases all kinds of laws. It just did not matter because, he was such an exquisite liar. And I say liar, he has an understanding of the fact that he is saying things that aren't true. I really question at this point whether or not he actually understands that reality is different from the world that he has created in his head. Little things that are so easily disproven, I had more people attend my inauguration than anyone in history. Like, no. That was really, really easily disproven, and it was disproven, but he just kept repeating it, and so he made all of his minions repeat it, and then it became this habit. He grew this incredible network of people willing to just repeat his own nonsense to the point where, there was... It became easy for regular folks to believe the lies because no one lies that well.
Well, that's the thing, Sonia, that I find so interesting about it is President Trump isn't secretive about his playbook. I mean, he said in that, what was it, a Leslie Stahl interview years ago, I have to bash you guys so the people don't believe what you write about me. And when you attack me, I attack back. And I think basically said, I don't know if he ever said, just keep repeating it. But clearly the playbook was, whether it's true or not, if this is our message, we just keep saying it as if it's the God's honest truth. And that's just what we do. And it's funny, the very first day, right, with the inauguration, and Sean Spicer coming out for an audience of one, clearly, just ranting and raving about this. It was just, it's amazing theater, and really just, you know, kind of a cult, you know, a David Koresh type thing, where it's just like, hey, man, this must be true. He's saying it this much. This must be true. And you do wonder if there's a point where you just end up believing the things you're saying, because you're like, no, this is my reality.
Well, it's not just that you believe that what they're saying, because so many people say it. I mean, when Sean Spicer was no longer acceptable, you know, there was a string of other people that came after, whether it was Scaramucci or Kelly McEnany or Sarah Huckabee Sanders. I mean, there's just a long, long line of people willing to lie, all the way down to Rudy Giuliani, who is still carrying water for that man, which you got to admit is pretty impressive.
Well, and Rudy, Rudy makes me even more nervous than President Trump. President Trump, I think, knows what he's doing. I don't know that he's believing everything he's saying. I think he is, you know, he's kind of like, I think, like Rush Limbaugh and some of these guys are, where they know what's real, but they also know their audience. Rudy, and the way he is, I don't know anymore. Like, I'm worried about his mental health. He does not seem right.
Well, so is his daughter. She wrote an entire op-ed about her father recently.
Really?
Yeah. No, there's you know, there's the people that are repeating this nonsense, these obvious lies, because they know on which side their bread is buttered. You know, they know who their supporters are, who their voters are. You know, the Hollies and the Ted Cruzes of the world. You know, these are people that recognize that this is now the Republican base, and if you want to hold on to them, this is what you have to be. This is a political calculation on their part.
Well,
you know, you don't have to be brilliant to understand that this man is lying every time he opens his mouth.
Now, that's what's interesting to me. We only have a few minutes left, so I want to ask you about this. And we're going to talk about Georgia, and I want you to tell me about Stacey Abrams, but we'll have to do that another time. Because they're talking about impeachment, which is 2 weeks left, and I get it. They're saying, listen, we have to make a statement about this, and things like this can't happen. So I get where they're going with it. But what's interesting to me is, like, you're thinking, well, House can do whatever they want. They're not going to get the majority necessary. And I think impeachment, you need two-thirds majority in the Senate. So it's a big number. And most likely, they're not going to get it, and it's symbolic. But I do wonder, because I've read, and I don't know the exact laws, that if they impeach and convict, he might not be able to run again. And so it makes me think for a second, huh, because the Republican Party is stuck right now. President Trump, if he wants to keep this up for the next 4 years, he can hold on to them. And they're at such a weird place right now, with guys turning on each other, some of them turning on Trump, some of them not, some of them saying, sticking with him till the end. And if they actually impeached him, and if that's true, that he then couldn't run again, they would then free themselves from the shackles they have with President Trump, and then they could sort of have this opportunity to reinvent themselves. If they don't do that, he's there, you know, causing them agitata for as long as he wants.
Well, so here's the problem with that. Donald Trump has completely reformed the Republican base. Even if Donald Trump were to disappear tomorrow, just whisked away from the face of the planet, you know, off to a realm from which there is no return. It doesn't change the fact that this is what the Republican base expects now. And that's why, you know, when Lindsey Graham is strolling the halls of, you know, the Ronald Reagan Airport in Washington, D.C., he's now being harassed by people in MAGA hats for being a traitor to his country, even though, you know, Graham has been, you know, off and on a pretty loud Trump advocate. He's poisoned the well far too much at this point. So even if he's not able to run in 2024, that doesn't matter. It's what the Republican base expects. And for better or for worse, people like Hawley and Cruz understand that. So, you know, until today was a really interesting day. Until, you know, private culture, until corporate culture, until, you know, the rest of society finally bands together and says, no, this blatant lying isn't just wrong, it is actually undermining democracy. None of that is going to change. Because these people believe what they believe, and they're not going to be convinced otherwise, no matter how much evidence we put in front of them. And so it was really something today, or was it yesterday? I don't know if it was yesterday or today, but Twitter, Facebook, Instagram all suddenly cut off Donald Trump's social media access.
Yeah.
You know, when Google and Apple suddenly said, you know what, we're going to pull the Parler app from our stores unless they start, you know, moderating content, that was a statement from a lot of very rich, very powerful people saying this has gone as far as we are willing to let it go. Now, from where I'm standing, it's about 5 years too late, but better late than never, because until we are able to stop the momentum that he's got, you know, there's always going to be other people willing to pop their head. Like, I'm chopping off this snake's head. Two more heads are going to grow right back because they figured out the model and they know what the Republican base wants now. And it's more Donald Trump.
Sonja von Meter is an opposition researcher. I think you can tell which side she works for. The best. I'm sticking with Twitter until they cancel at Bourbon Face, because that's the best Twitter handle that's out there. She's a great follow on Twitter at Bourbon Face. Sonja, always great to talk to you. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you so much, Matt.